Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz. I'm speaking today with David Erfle, founder of the Junior Miner Junkie. And Dave, it's always great to have you on the show to get your thoughts on the precious metals and the junior mining stocks. We were talking off mic a little bit about an analogy to this time period where we're seeing such apathy in the markets and where we're seeing kind of a long, drawn-out consolidation. And as people say, these things either scare you out or they wear you out. This has definitely been a wear-you-out kind of corrective move. And it reminds us of, in 2016, there was that epic move from January of 2016 up to the summer, up to August of 2016. A nice eight-month move. Everybody got excited. The metals were taking off. Generalists were coming in the sector. And then it pulled back for the rest of 2016, 2017, into 2018, into a huge, drawn-out, consolidated base that really washed all the excitement out of the sector. Is that what we're seeing again after this big run-up into 2020 August and this other almost two-year now corrective move that's just grinding everybody down into the dirt?
Yeah, Shad, it sure feels like that. Yeah, basically the move that you just spoke about took place in 6 months, and it was fueled mostly by short covering because the shorts had cleaned up in this sector for the previous 4 years, which saw the GDX and the GDXJ go down over 80%. So that was fueled by short covering. And at the time that it took place from a bottom in the gold price of 1045 after it had made a 50% retracement from that huge move that it made in the decade-long bull market previously. And we were also talking off mic about how the miners at that time were devastated. I mean, their balance sheets were awful. Because of the bad investments that they'd made in the previous bull market, they weren't making any money. They had tons of debt. And by the time that the move took place in that 6 months, the gold price ran up about $300. And that was good for the miners. They started to make some money there. But like you said, I mean, we had about a two-year consolidation process. And during that process, the GDX was down around 45% or so, and the GDXJ was down around the same amount, around 45, 48%, something like that. When it finally hit lows in Q3 of 2018, which was September of 2018, which I still believe the market has a chance of the miners have a chance of holding that bottom that it made in September of 2021. But the miners consolidating for all that time, and it sure feels like it's the same type of atmosphere. But on the more bullish side of that, the miners now have never been more healthy. You know, they're making huge profits with gold at $1,800, and $1,800 gold is just a magnet. It will not get too far above it, and it will not get too far below it. But while it's been doing that for the past year, investors have just grown bored and tired with this sector. They're tired of getting the rug pulled out from under them each time it has a pop to the upside. I mean, we've had one day recently where the gold complex finally decoupled from the stock market in only one day. Sure, it was a huge move up, but all those gains were taken away by the end of the week when the move happened in the middle of the week. So that also took a lot of wind out of the sails of the seasoned speculators that have remained in this sector. So there's still a lot of apathy here. And if you look technically at the GDX, we had a monthly close on Monday, and the GDX was able to hold that 30 level on a monthly closing basis. And that's basically the strong resistance level for 7 years back when the GDXJ tried to break out of a huge seven-year accumulative base. And it finally did. And we had that huge run-up this time from March 2020 in only 4.8 months where both ETFs, GDX, GDXJ tripled in just 4.8 months. So that excess is still being worked off here. And it's just made people bored, even though the gold price remains at $1,800. And these miners are making so much money at these gold prices. You know, this sector is, I've never been more bullish for the long term in this sector. And I've never been more excited about the deals that I'm getting, even though I'm watching some of the stocks that I purchased go down 15 and 20% from where I purchased them when they were great deals then. It's just going to take this switch to finally flip in this sector. And it's funny, it always flips when we least expect it.
I think that's a good point, Dave, because just hearkening back to that end of that consolidation from the run in 2016 all the way through 2018, that September-October period, I remember that distinctly and thinking, I don't even know why I'm in this sector anymore. I don't know what I'm doing. Right. But I kept buying because I thought I still believe in the longer term thesis. You know, what's going to happen when all the Fed has to deal with this giant rate hiking cycle eventually, which we're now finally getting close to, but they have these mountains of debt. Where else is there to protect yourself from the coming financial storm? But I remember being almost as apathetic as all the other investors at that time, thinking, what in the world is it going to take to get this sector going? And then we kind of bottomed out of boredom, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we're getting close to that again, where most of the funds are out of the sector. Most of the big funds closed their research desks that had to do with commodities and gold and silver and precious metals years ago. There's really not a whole lot of interest. And the people that were in for 2019 and 2020, they're gone. So it's mostly us resource investors trading amongst ourselves. And you see that in the low volumes and the weird market moves in these juniors. Are we going to get set up here for potentially bottoming out of boredom? And are we going to see something happen where people start catching a little bit more momentum, a little bit more momentum, and there isn't really a strong catalyst other than momentum will build upon itself and get more investors back in the sector?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's, well, look, we've got 6 weeks now before the Fed is going to raise rates in mid-March. I mean, that is pretty much a done deal now that they're going to do this. The hawkish rhetoric now is, are they going to hike four times? Are they going to hike five times? Are they going to hike even seven times? But nobody talks about this $30 trillion of debt that's hanging over us right now. I mean, the last time the Fed started a rate hike cycle back in 2015, I think the debt was coming on $20 trillion. Now it's $30 trillion. And, you know, most of that debt is interest, 70% of that debt is interest payments. So I don't see how the Fed is going to be able to hike very much because of that. And B, I mean, I know we've talked about this ad nauseum about how gold always goes higher during rate hike cycles. You know, the secular bull market began in 1999 during a rate hike cycle. The phase one started, and then phase two started in 2015 at the beginning of that rate hike cycle. So we know that's the case. And we know it's going to happen, but we don't know where it's going to happen from, right? And, you know, there's a lot of bears out there saying that gold's going to give up the ghost here. It's going to lose 1750. Then it's going to lose 1720. Then it's going to go down to 1675, then down to 1570. Well, they say all this, but I fail to see what the catalyst is going to be, because this rate hike cycle that they've been talking about ad nauseum, sure, they've kicked up the rhetoric more that it's going to be even more hawkish, that they're going to hike even more, but still the gold price hangs around $1,800. So, and simmering in the background that nobody really talks about is this geopolitical situation between Russia and NATO and the EU over in Ukraine. You know, I know that Putin's told the Russian people that he will, if he is planning to attack, he's not going to do it until after the Olympics, which is after February 20th. The reason I want to see the gold price going higher is because of Russia invading Afghanistan, and it gets really nasty over there. But we got to consider that. That is a wild card that could take the gold price over 1900 and break us out of this consolidation pattern and get that handle of the cup and handle pattern back up to 2100. And then when it gets over 2100, boy, you know, we know that it's going to go a lot higher a lot quickly. But, you know, that's simmering in the background and nobody's really talking about that.
Yeah, it's a good point. And from a charting perspective, it doesn't really matter what the reason is for why gold breaks out above a resistance level, just the fact that it happens. The problem is, on geopolitical news, Dave, sometimes we'll see gold move, but we won't see the miners or silver engaged. And what was exciting about the move 2 weeks ago is that we saw silver outperforming gold, we saw the seniors outperforming the metals, and we saw the juniors outperforming the seniors. So everything was stacked up in the right batting order, where it looked like a bullish impulse leg was starting, but then it fizzled out immediately. Do you think that if we had a geopolitical move, it would just be strong for gold, but maybe would not help silver and the miners?
Well, after you just said that, you know, that move was basically on saber rattling in Ukraine. I mean, it was the Biden administration coming out with that confusing press conference where he basically said, we're going to go ahead and let him invade somewhat. But boy, if he does a full-on front, but if he does a full-on attack, he better look out because we're gonna put all these sanctions on him. And then they backtrack, and then they backpedal on it later. But that was the catalyst that took the gold price up to 1850, and also was the catalyst where we had that huge move in the mining sector on that Wednesday, a few Wednesdays ago.
Yeah, it's a good observation, Dave. And we make a lot of GDX and GDXJ because they are good proxies for the sector, and they're definitely good proxies for what's going on in the larger producers, the mid-tier producers, some of the royalty companies. But in the universe of smaller juniors, they're kind of marching to the beat of their own drum. And one other thing we were talking about before we started recording was just the really ugly apathy and pure boredom in these stocks to the point where they keep selling off on very low volume. And it's pretty clear that most of the funds and most of the institutions have been out of the space for a while. So these are resource investors that are starting to capitulate, and you see it on the really low volumes and the outsized moves. How are you playing this market with some of these junior miners that maybe don't behave quite as nicely as the GDX or GDXJ? What are you doing in your portfolio?
Well, I mean, I've eschewed my 20% rule. I've got this, when I believe that the sector is in an uptrend and it's going really well, if I make a mistake on my entry point and the stock goes down 20%, I sell it. No questions asked, I sell it. But when I feel that the sector is in the process of making a significant bottom, meaning a significant bottom where the GDX and the GDXJ could skyrocket out of at any given time, I think that's what's taking place right now. So I've eschewed that rule, and I've got a handful of stocks now that are down 20, 25% that I purchased recently. And I just refuse to sell them down here because when I bought them, the value was incredible. And the value is even more incredible now, which is great for my newer subscribers that are coming in. And they see that, and they, since I'm transparent with everything, they see that, hey, he bought this price 20, 25% higher. It's really cheap right now, so I'm getting a really good deal. And they are, and I pore over these things. I do all kinds of research. I talk to management. I find out how much management paid for their shares. And I follow how much money they have in the bank. I follow their de-risking programs. And it's just incredible how much value is out there right now. And this is what was happening also in the late 2018 that we were talking about before, something like this. But there's even more incredible value now because back in late 2018, a lot of these companies really weren't cashed up. They still needed to raise some cash. But this time we had a huge move in the capital markets after the gold price went up to 2100. I mean, everybody was able to finance at really good prices, and the smart ones did so, and they still have a lot of that cash left. So if a company has enough cash to last for the rest of the year, and I'm pretty confident that we're going to have a significant bottom pretty soon. I think it's going to be in Q1, but even if it's in Q2, if they're cashed up for the rest of the year, I'm not going to worry if the stock's going to go down a little more from here because I know the company's on the right track. I know they're doing the right things. I know they're in a great jurisdiction. I know they got millions of ounces that are economic at $1,600 gold. So as painful it is to watch and live through, I know that I'll come out on the other side ahead if I just remain patient because I've done this before a few times in the past 20 years. And like you said at the get-go here, when you feel like, oh my God, what am I doing in this sector? It continues to go down. And why am I buying these ugly charts? 6 months later, you're like, wow, I'm sure glad I bit the bullet and I bought these ugly charts because now I've got three, four, five bagger gains now. So I do think that's down the road. I just don't know what the actual bottom is going to be where it starts to take place.
Some great points there, Dave. I can't wait for the point in a couple of months, maybe 6 months, where we can look back and pat ourselves in the back for buying ugly charts once again. But one more question before we wrap, and that is on M&A, mergers and acquisitions. We had a string of them at the end of last year, really kicking off with the Kirkland Lake Agnico Eagle deal, and then had a half dozen other ones. And you had made the point, a great point, I thought, that most of the companies they were going after were single asset, safe jurisdiction, high margin projects. But then we've kind of seen that dry up lately. Do you think with this apathy and with the pricing levels drifting back down again that we may see yet another wave of M&A? And are you positioning in any companies, not just for a sector rebound, but also for that potential takeover premium?
Absolutely. I've been doing that for the past few months. You know, I bought these companies that I thought was, wow, I can't believe I got it at this price. And then it goes lower. So, yes, I have already done that. And we got some news this week of a West African producer taking a position in a company. So I think you're going to start to see more of that. You're going to start to see these majors say, hey, look, everything's on sale here. It's a great time to take either strategic positions or either take something out that we've already got a strategic position in. And they're going to do so with a cash component because they can. They have all this cash on the books. That's been the great thing about a lot of these M&As. You know, they haven't been all done with paper. They've learned their mistakes from the past on doing that. So I do think it's going to happen again. And especially if you see the gold price lose 1750, then I think you're going to start to see these majors get aggressive if these juniors go down even more. Because, I mean, let's say they take something out that's down 20 or 30%. And they even give them a 50% premium. I mean, that's bad for the shareholders of the stock that gets taken out. But all it takes is for one or two of those deals to happen, and people will start looking around for the sector. Okay, what's the next one they're going to take out? Oh, look at this. This has a lot of similarities. And look what it's trading at. And look how many ounces they got in the ground. Look at the blue sky potential. It won't take much to move these stocks at these levels. It won't take much buying.
Well, it's an encouraging thought to get that going because consolidation is helpful for the industry. It bulks those companies up so that they're more attractive to a larger base of investors. And it does get the animal spirits going a little bit as far as who will be next on the acquisition train. So we'll keep following along. Dave, we always appreciate getting your thoughts here on the KE Report. And if folks like Dave's thoughts, definitely check out his site, juniorminerjunkie.com. Consider his service. He spends a lot of time and research going into the companies that he picks for his subscribers. And Dave, thanks for sharing some time with us here at the KER.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Chad.